Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I just thought, you know what, I need to introduce Amanda to our listeners because hers is a story that needs to be shared. We've in fact are having a webinar tomorrow at 3 p.m. If anybody is interested in that, just send me your, it's just easier if you just send me your number and I'll forward you the link. It is free. It's from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And we're talking about born in adversity. Amanda is somebody who embodies success out of adversity. Amanda, very, very good morning and welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Howard.
So, it's a very difficult conversation to have at 12 minutes past eight in the morning, talking about thriving through adversity. But we're living in a time that we are all so desperate for inspiration, aren't we? Are you seeing that as well? That there's this hunger for people just to be inspired?
No, absolutely. I mean, also morning to your listeners, by the way. It really is. I mean, there hasn't been a time like this. None of us could have ever imagined we would live through a time like this. So all the inspiration and motivation in the world is needed now because people have sunk into deep, dark places because some have lost their jobs or their livelihoods. Some have lost their loved ones. So, you know, everybody needs a little something to keep going.
Absolutely. Amanda Dambuza, a businesswoman and author. In fact, I believe that you're about to launch your next book. But for our listeners who don't know you, who haven't yet read your books, and I've got no doubt they will after this discussion, give us a very short overview of your journey.
Thank you, Howard. So I was born in Natal and then grew up in the Transkei. And this was around the apartheid years. And, you know, unfortunately, my mom and my dad went their separate ways before I was even one or so. And his greatest desire was to have a baby boy. And there I was, a baby girl. And I have never met him till today.
Wow.
And I then, you know, grew up in the Transkei where my mother had come from. But she also left us in the Transkei. So just as she separated from my dad, took us to her upbringing home, then left us there with extended family, and she came to Joburg to find work. She never came back. Unfortunately, I guess I was introduced to her when I was about 6-7 years old. Mm. It's the most weird thing to be introduced to your mother.
Wow, you know? Wow.
I still remember the day like it was yesterday. But I mean, where we grew up, and as much as we had, you know, food in our tummy, I had food in my tummy, a roof over my head. There was no love. There was no nurture. It was rife with abuse, all kinds of abuse, sexual, physical, emotional, psychological. It was really just the conditions were incredibly difficult. But, you know, I always knew, and I just kept telling myself that I'm going to have to just, you know, go through the storm. It's incredible that at such a young age, I had to tell myself that.
But it's incredible that you had the ability to almost separate yourself from your circumstances and say, you know what, I can get through it. There's something better waiting.
I wasn't that eloquent.
No, of course not. I'm sure it's instinct at that point,
an innate
survivor instinct probably.
And that's it. All I needed to do was just survive it. And I just kept in my head, I just kept thinking, you know, someday I'll be a grown up person. And I won't be in the hands of other people and I'll be owning my own destiny. So in my head, I waited for that moment where I grew up, you know, because I felt that if I went, when I was a bigger person, then nobody could just hurt me because then I would defend myself or I would protect myself. So anyway, I mean, we ran away. I was 13 years old when we ran away to come and find our mother in Joburg. And we rocked up at a shack in Mshengoville unannounced at 4 o'clock in the morning. And, that was, another beginning of another journey, a very hard one. three teenagers begging for love from their mother for the first time. And I mean, my mom was 40. She had a new husband. It was always going to be complicated. But we didn't, we didn't work the details out of that. You know, we just wanted to come. So, I think it was really a difficult upbringing, but I used all of that pain in some way to just keep propelling me forward. I mean, I went to Wits University, where it was really difficult to get in firstly. The registration fee was 4,000 rands and I didn't have it. My mom didn't have it. But, somehow she hustled, explored and begged and, eventually we got it. But I tried so hard to get a bursary. From what's NSFAS now was TEFSA then. But I wasn't poor enough because my mom was actually working as a nurse. But my mom was earning 10,000 rands a month and looking after her family. So I was that missing middle and I got the letter to be financially excluded around mid-year. And then that to me was another hurdle in my journey. I just felt, you know, I always knew that I just needed that education because
that was
my ticket. I really needed that ticket. I was desperate for that ticket because all those years when I was growing up and I was telling myself that, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to be able to look after myself and I won't be dependent on anyone. I won't have to just withstand abuse for the sake of food in my tummy. I felt that education was that platform, and to have it snatched away like that was really heartbreaking. But fortunately, TEFSA came through. Can you believe it? Okay. 6 months later, I was just so grateful. I pushed on and graduated and started working. And I can assure you, every single opportunity I had, I touched it like it was never coming back. Because I've never had Plan B. You know, I've never had a parent.
I love that. And that's, I think that's the message that maybe so many of our kids, and I want to ask you that question in terms of your own experience with kids, it's that approach that says, I'm holding on to this because this opportunity is never coming back. That hunger is very, very difficult. And in fact, our co-host, Zanati, who's not in today, unfortunately, because of some transport issues, has messaged me. Yeah. She says, Amanda gave me her first book as a birthday gift in 2018. I was on my way to Israel. I love her. And I see she's releasing a children's book on the challenges that they face in their homes. When did she tell her kids about the difficult past and how did they take it? Because to some extent, and that question is so multi-layered because it's also about it's impossible for your kids to experience the same drive for the same reasons that you do, thankfully. And your whole goal is obviously not to, you know, to protect them from that. But at the same time, how do you impart that drive?
Well, I think it's, first of all, it was Ray. Oh, hi, Zanati. I love her. It's very important to tell our stories to our children. You know, for me, it was really about, firstly, I had no roots. You know, my entire father's side, that literally doesn't, it's like it never existed. I've never met anyone from my father's side. And my mother's side, my mother was an only child and, you know, her parents passed on. And, you know, there were no real roots for me. And the fact that I was constantly reminded that I don't belong there and that my mom doesn't want me and my dad doesn't want me just made it even more difficult to have a sense of identity. So it was very important for me to document my own history, firstly in baked in pain and just some elements of my life, of course, because you can't put your entire life on a 240 page book. But, you know, it's just documenting some defining moments in my life. And then, you know, talk to my children about where I've come from. Of course, you talk to them in a language that they can understand, in a way that they can consume, the information that they can consume. And you start at a point where you appreciate that they will actually understand, because they are at school. They've got friends at school who get to experience a gender-based violence or domestic violence. Mm. They've got, friends at school who come from homes that they might not be familiar with or aware of. But they need to be aware of their surroundings. They need to be aware of where I've come from. So I've told my children, I grew up without my mama, without Gogo, and without my father, their grandfather. And they cannot understand it. It's like, how, mama, where was she? So, you start to explain without making their grandmother, putting her in a bad light. So you have to find a way.
Yeah, that's the balance,
because
you have to, you've obviously got so much, your mom let you down. She really did. She left you in a situation. And yes, you can understand it, and there's livelihood, and there's all sorts of realities. But you were a child and you needed protection and you didn't get it. So there's obviously a lot of, and you're very real about that, and it's very hard not to put that across to your kids.
And remember, I want them to have a relationship with their grandma. My issues with my mother have got nothing to do with them and her, it's being able to just compartmentalize what it is that you are dealing with. And my relationship with my mother is always going to be a complicated one, because that little child, every time mother shows, the little child shows up, and the little child, I've learned to give what the little child never had. But, it's incredible how the reasons why something happened does not take away the pain.
Absolutely. Especially because a child.
When you're a child, I don't, I even said to my mom, I would have slept under a bridge with you. Just to be there with you. But of course, her perspective is different from my perspective as a child. Perhaps for her, she's like, there's no way my child should sleep under a bridge. Maybe I should sleep under a bridge. But for a child, only wants to be with their parent. So anyway, so I have to separate the issues, and I don't in any way put my mom in bed light, with them. And I also tell them, about being touched inappropriately. So I teach them about, remember, if someone touches you inappropriately, you tell me, you tell your father, or you tell your teacher. So start to be aware of the realities that they are going to face. And this is one of the reasons I've now released my second book, which is called A Brave Girl Named Aya. It's all about, children grow up in homes where their mothers are being beaten up. Children grow up in homes where they become destitute for whatever reason. They grow up in homes where they get abused. How do we start to make them aware of those things in a language that they can understand? In a language that's not traumatic for them, but in also in a way where we don't protect them from the real harsh truth, because they grow up with these realities anyway. So how do we equip them and enable them to start talking about it? I wish somebody had helped me with that when I was younger. A lot of the times I felt it was my fault, So that's why I wrote the second book.
and because at that time, these conversations weren't taking place. I just don't think we had, Lindy, I don't think we had these conversations as a child. The idea was you protect your children even from the conversation, but unfortunately, protecting them from the conversation placed them at risk from having it. People weren't aware. It's a very, very difficult one. And this gender-based violence, what we're experiencing. In fact, my article in the Jewish Report this week is about this, because there was a terrible incident in Israel. There's been a couple of incidents, and this one is just a horror. And I normally like to write, light-hearted, funny articles. But this one was a story of up to, I don't know, tens of young men. Sure. Took turns with a young woman. She was drunk in a hotel room. She called one of them in at every time. But she's a 16-year-old. She was being abused, whether she realized it or not at the time, and she was drunk. And I'm saying, what brings a society to the point that these young men could be standing outside waiting a turn with a young woman who is very, very clearly not in her right frame of mind at all. And I don't know what the answer is. And that it's easier to look at another country like Israel because it's far away from us. So it's not as painful. But when we look back home here, we're not winning this war.
We absolutely
no. I mean, it's horrendous, honestly. And listen, it is a global issue. However, it's there are countries that have got better consequences, if I may put it that way. I feel that in South Africa, the justice system has let women down significantly. But also, you know, even in our homes though, that, which is where it really starts, it's squashing these conversations. It's, knowing that someone is being abused, but you know what? Let's keep it to ourselves. It's a family matter. You don't want to embarrass the family. You don't want to break that family name. But all of this on the whole leads to these things, leads to girls thinking, you know, I deserve to be treated badly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because they've grown up and they haven't been taught that actually this is not how a lady should be treated. And the boys haven't been taught that this is not how you treat a lady. So it is a very complex issue. But you know, often we are really dealing with broken people. And broken people will absolutely break others.
Absolutely right. I want you to change gears a bit. You become very successful in your life. And one of the amazing things is that you're unapologetic around it. And we're living in a world, and in fact, I'll read you what Zanati is asking as well. And it captures it beautifully. She says, one thing that I can say about Amanda is that she's unapologetic about how she lives her life. Where does she get the conviction in a world where people are constantly apologizing for every little thing because someone somewhere might be offended? And it's
especially now
we are living in, you know, every time, you know, I wrote something, I don't know, on Twitter, and it was harmless about coming into to a studio and whatever, and everybody, and somebody writes, well, at least you work here, and like,
in
oh, for goodness sake,
people are, you know, looking to be offended.
I get it, you know, and it was tongue in cheek. I was joking. There was nothing, you know, so how do you continue to respond to that? And somehow you seem to get away with it.
Well, firstly, I avoid Twitter.
Yeah, I hear that.
Whatever I do, it's very like, I'm not fully engaged on Twitter, but of course I use it as a platform, you know, because it's there, I also really stay away from negativity. And I can assure you negativity will find you wherever you are. I kick it away like a ball.
Right.
And because I've worked so hard to not just to be where I am in terms of what the world sees as success, but you know, I've worked on myself. I've invested in myself. I've rebuilt a broken foundation. I have redefined who I am. And who I am and the joy that I've built up over the years has got nothing to do with external factors. In fact, I am so clear in my mind that only I can actually live my life. And I cannot live my life trying to please others. Nobody knows you can hear about my journey, but you will never appreciate the depth of what I've had to go through to be where I am.
I love that.
So for me, it's not really about, I don't owe anyone any apology. I don't owe anyone any money. I don't owe anyone anything.
Absolutely.
You know?
And in fact, quite the contrary, because you support work initiatives. Yeah. You're very involved in trying to better the world that you live in. But it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it.
Yeah. No. I have to enjoy it. I mean, I have to enjoy everything about my life because I've come from a place where, in fact, I am at a place where popular script says I shouldn't be. You know,
The stats were against you, very, very much against you
from the onset, right? And I think, in a way, you know, I've had to prove to myself that I may have been told I'm going to amount to nothing when I was younger. But I had to prove to myself that I am worth way more than just that. In fact, I am something. You know, I was born something. I just needed to find what that was. So you can't sit in a corner and be apologetic about something that you've worked very hard to earn. And you know, people along the way, of course, give you a hand and lift you up, but you get that hand because you have yourself been lifting up. You know, you've been lifting yourself up and people meet you where you are. So yeah, no, people must live their lives the way they want to. How to make it we die alone and you know, you go. Yeah. And cremated, whatever, by yourself.
Absolutely. Amanda Dambuza, we do have to leave it there. But I've got the privilege of chatting to you tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. On a webinar. If anybody is interested, let me know. I will send you the link. It is free. It's an hour that I can tell you will change your perspective. So you are more than welcome to join us for that. Amanda Dambuza, thank you. What an absolute privilege to chat.